Shalom. We're continuing in the middle of Ma'amar Hador, where Rav Kook is referring to what we learned about last time. We saw that our generation is different from past generations, whereas in past generations, when the people of Israel left the Torah, it was because the Torah was too high for them. It was too difficult, too demanding. They wanted to enjoy life. They wanted to go to the paganist temples and have eat a lot of meat and drink a lot of wine. Today's non-religious is the exact opposite. It's not that religion is too high for him, but in his eyes, it's too low for him. He sees it as old-fashioned, shallow, meaningless. And that's where Rav Kook in the second paragraph starts. Muzar hu ador hazeh. Our generation is strange. Shovav hu, he's naughty. Praihu, he's wild. Aval gam na'ala v'nisa. But he's also idealistic. We have today a new type of non-religious person who is educated. He has ideologies. But he does not see the Torah as an ideology, as something high and lofty and spiritual and moral and ethical. And to understand what's going on here, basically we can make a chart, if I could show a chart, where we see the difference between the rebelling sons and their fathers. We're talking about in Europe about 120 years ago. Whereas the sons were modern and the fathers were traditional, the sons were Zionist and the fathers were religious. They saw Judaism as a religion. Now, if you look at the ideas that the sons brought home from their Zionist youth movements, we'll make a list and then we'll see what the fathers and the rabbis of Europe had to say about them at the time. The sons said they wanted to make Aliyah. Aliyah, Israel, that's the common denominator between all of the Zionist movements. Then they learned about Herzl, which talks about how having a Jewish state is important. Not just to be in the land of Israel, but a Jewish state, even if it were to be in Uganda, is important. Then comes Jabotinsky, and he spoke about the importance of having a Jewish army, of self-respect, of fighting back. Then came Eliezer ben Yehuda, who revived the Hebrew language as a spoken language. He says a nation needs a national language. We have Jews coming from Sephardic countries, from Ashkenazic countries, from all over the world. We have to return to our original language. Then A.D. Gordon, who is the father of the labor movement, he said, in the land of Israel, we can't all be rabbis and we can't all be doctors and engineers. We need Jewish farmers. We need Jewish plumbers, electricians, garbage men. And we can't be embarrassed to do physical labor. Came along socialism. David Ben-Gurion, he was the head of the socialist Hestadrut, the workers' labor movement. And he said that the idea of socialism, of equality, is very important. We should set up kibbutzim and moshavim, where all of the money is communal. Then came along J.L. Magnus, who said that if we want a Jewish country, a Jewish state, we have to set up a Jewish university. Because you have to remember, at the time, Jews were not accepted to most universities in the world. And we can't have all the Jews as rabbis, and we can't have all the Jews as farmers. We also need engineers and doctors, etc. Then came Achad Ha'am, who spoke about cultural Zionism, that if we are to revive the state, we have to also have Jewish literature, theater, culture. And these are the new ideas which the sons brought home from the Zionist movement. And when they tried out these ideas on their parents, everything was no. The parents saw these new ideas as contradicting religion. In general, religious people are very conservative, with a small c. Religious people don't like changes. And when the fathers and many of the rabbis in Europe heard about the idea of Aliyah, they said, no, we're supposed to wait for Mashiach. God sent us to exile, and God is going to be the one to return us to exile. And when the sons started speaking about a Jewish state, again, the father said, no, we're supposed to be subservient to the Gentiles until the Mashiach comes, and he will found the Jewish state. And when the sons spoke about the idea of reviving the Jewish army, Jabotinsky, the father said, no, Jews don't serve in the army. Jews, for 2,000 years, when we heard the word army, we ran in the other direction. Nobody wanted to serve in the Tsar's army or any foreign army. And like we've said in the past, the Jew, for thousands of years, fought with his passport. Because the only reason why he was in Poland was because it was good. If it wasn't good, he moved to Russia. And if it wasn't good in Russia, he moved to Germany. And if it wasn't good in Germany, he moved to America. But the Jew did not fight the enemies. So the fathers were against stooping down to the level of the Gentiles. I remember my father, when he went to Yeshiva University, he came one morning to Shiur with his wrestling jacket on, and the Rebbe was European, said, this is terrible. The voice is the voice of Yaakov, and the hands, wrestling, that's for Esav. That's not a Jewish thing. Jews don't serve in the army. And then they continued about speaking about the Jewish language. And the father said, no, you're not supposed to use Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, but for davening and for learning. It's a Lashon HaKodesh. And then the son said, okay, so let's talk about working the land. The father said, that's not a job for a nice Jewish boy. Jews are doctors, Jews are rabbis. It's bitul Torah to work the land. That's for goyim. You have to remember also, in a lot of places like Russia, Jews weren't allowed even to buy land. And then the son started talking about socialism. And the father said, socialism? Karl Marx was anti-religious. You have to remember, Karl Marx said that socialism, that a religion is the opium of the masses, that religious people, according to the father of socialism, Karl Marx, said religious people, instead of rolling up their sleeves to solve problems, they push it off on God. God will solve our problems. Or they say it will be better in Olam Haba, or it will be better in Yemot HaMashiach, or it will be better in Tchiyat HaMetim. And that is against socialist ideology. But, so the religious people said if socialism is anti-religious, religion is anti-socialist. And then, when they started talking about secular education, founding a university, the father said, no, that's assimilation. And when the young people started talking about Jewish culture, the father said, no, if you want books, we have plenty of books. Learn Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim. If you have time, learn Mishnah. You have more time, learn Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, Midrashim. We don't need literature. And theater is Bitul Torah. And Begitzur, Rav Kook is pointing out, look at this chart, what's going on. Nobody should be surprised that all the young people are running away from religion. Because if the fathers, the traditional religious fathers, are telling them that it's either or, either you're religious or you're modern and Zionist, but you can't be both. So the son said, okay, to heck with religion. We prefer being modern. We prefer being idealistic and Zionist. And the fathers basically were the ones who chased the young people away from religion. Rav Kook sees this situation, and he opens up a third category. That in addition to the Zionist modern sons, who have all these modern Zionist ideologies, as opposed to their fathers, who are religious and traditional, who just say no, no, no. Rav Kook said, let's look at original Judaism. If we look at the original, at the Tanakh, we see that the rebellion of these young people is not against religion. As a matter of fact, they're even more religious than their fathers. Because if you look at the Torah, is Torah against Aliyah? The Torah, the first mitzvah to the first Jew, Avraham Avinu, is Lech Lecha, Mi'artzecha, Mi'molatecha, Mi'beit Avicha, El Aretz Asher Areka, go on Aliyah. And we see that Moshe Rabbeinu was dying to enter Eretz Yisrael. And we see that Hashem tells us that he is in Eretz Yisrael, and there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. So what do you mean a Jew should not live in Eretz Yisrael? Original Judaism says yes. The parent said, we're not supposed to have a Jewish state until Mashiach. Rav Kook points out, but if you look at original Judaism always had a state. From the time we entered the land of Israel, Yehoshua, Shoftim, the kings, David HaMelech, Shaul HaMelech, Shlomo, they were all heads of the Jewish state. The Bar Kochva rebellion fought to regain independence for the Jewish state. The Maccabees and Hanukkah, they fought to return to independence of a Jewish state. So, original Judaism is in favor of a Jewish state. I asked the fathers, what about serving in the army? Rav Kook said, that's a good example. Look in the original Tanakh, and you'll see that all of the heroes of the Tanakh all served in the Jewish army. What do you mean we don't stoop down to the level of the goyim? Moshe Rabbeinu, when he saw a Gentile beating a Jew, he fought back. Yehoshua ben Nun, Shimshon, Gidon, Yiftach, David HaMelech, the Maccabees, all of the Jews always fought in the army. That is original Judaism. It was just in Galut that Jews stopped fighting in the army. What about speaking Hebrew? Rav Kook said, oh, here too, look at the original Judaism. Our forefathers, they all spoke Hebrew as a spoken language, not just for davening, not just for learning. Moshe Rabbeinu did not speak Yiddish. Otherwise, we would call him Moshe Rabinovich. Moshe Rabbeinu and David HaMelech and all of the archaeological finds, all of the coins, we see secular topics in Hebrew. And what about working the land? Said the fathers. That's Bitul Torah. That's not a job for the nice Jewish boy. Rav Kook said, Ma pitom? Look at the Tanakh in original Judaism. All of our forefathers, they all got their hands dirty. They all were farmers or shepherds. And what about a secular study? Rav Kook points out that secular study in the original Judaism is very important. In order to be on the Sanhedrin, you have to know 70 languages. You have to know biology to paskin questions of Masechet Chulin. You have to know geometry to paskin questions of Masechet Sukkah and Kilayim. You have to know physiology. You have to know biology also to paskin laws of Nida, etc., etc. So Judaism, original Judaism, is very much in favor of being broad and having a secular knowledge. And what about socialism? The father said, Judaism is opposed to socialism because Karl Marx was anti-religious. Rav Kook said, look at the ideas of socialism. Karl Marx did not invent the idea of equality, the idea of brotherhood, the idea that all people are created equal. That's come straight from the Torah. As a matter of fact, the idea, if you look in Eretz Yisrael, in the original Torah, when a person grew his crops, he had to give 2% to the Kohen and Truma, 10% to the Levi, Maaser, another 14% Shemitah, every seventh year, you leave your land for the poor people to take. Every 50th year, Yovel, that's another 2%. Tzedakah, you give 10% to Tzedakah. And all of their 58 agricultural mitzvot 24 mitzvot, which we give things to Kohanim. And if you put it all together, it comes out to more than 50% of what a person grows is not his. And he has to share it with those who are less fortunate. So Rav Kook said, who says that Judaism is against the ideology of socialism? Let's look at the ideology. And what about culture? Rav Kook said, here too. Let's look at the original Judaism. Judaism was also a nation, also a nationality. Of course we had a culture. We learned together once, we saw the Midrash, which says that when Hashem wanted to take the Jews out of Egypt, the Jews were paganists. They were of Dei Avodah Zarah. They didn't do Brit Milah. They ate Gid Hanasheh. They didn't observe whatever little mitzvot they had. So why should God redeem us? Chazal explained that, correct, they were not religious, but they did keep the Jewish culture. They continued speaking Hebrew. They continued using Hebrew names. They continued using Jewish dress. These are not necessarily religious aspects. These are cultural aspects. And if you look at Judaism, historically, the original Judaism was also a culture. And Bikitsur, what Rav Kook is telling the young people is that your rebellion is not against religion. Your fathers are mistaken when they say that it's either modernism and Zionism or religion. The truth is, we should take down the mechitza between the two, between religion and Zionism, and we wind up with the original Judaism. The original Judaism was religious Zionism. And Rav Kook points out that the young people, their rebellion is not against religion. As a matter of fact, regarding these issues, the issue of nationalism and Aliyah and having a Jewish state and a Jewish army and the holy language is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to work the land of Israel. Regarding all of these mitzvot, the sons, the rebellious sons, are even more religious than their fathers. Rav Kook explained to the young people, your rebellion is not against religion. It's against Galut. Because it was Galut who warped Judaism. Original Judaism is dynamic. It's idealistic. It's Zionist. But when the father said, no, 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 that was because of 2,000 years of exile where we did not speak Hebrew. And we did not have a Jewish army. We didn't have a Jewish land to work. We didn't have a Jewish state. We couldn't make Aliyah. And what happened is that those X's turned into an ideology. Many religious Jews in Europe thought that it was an ideology to be in exile. Rav Kook is telling the young people that your rebellion against exile is a good rebellion, because that's a rebellion whose time has come. Hashem wants us back in the land of Israel, and he wants us to revive the original Torah. In short, that's the first point, where Rav Kook says that the rebellion of the young people was necessary in order to rediscover the original Judaism. Religious people don't make revolutions. Older people don't make revolutions. It had to be younger people who were open-minded, who were idealistic at their peak of idealism, who looked objectively at the Galut religion and saw that it was lacking. And they were correct. Because we are ready to return to religious Zionism, to the original Judaism. That's point number one. But point number two is no less important. Rav Kook goes on in paragraph 3 of Ma'amar Hador, and he gives another reason for the rebellion against of the young people against Judaism. Mipnei mi'ut ha'avoda b'talmudam shel yesodei haregesh v'hada'at shebimerchav ha'torah. Because of a lack of effort in the study of the basics of the emotion and the intellect of the broad Torah, hu am zahav v'sonei ketem atov. The gold became dirty And people started hating gold. How can you hate gold? Only if it's covered with a film of dirt. Ad shenidmelo shakolu shafel harbe me'erko. Until the young people, the rebels, they all thought that Judaism was shallow and meaningless and not idealistic. Why? Because they did not learn the broad Torah. What is Rav Kook referring to? Chevra, I don't know what time it is where you are listening to this, but I could tell you that in all yeshivas at this time, almost all yeshivas, what are they studying? Gemara. In the morning, they study Gemara. In the afternoon, they study Gemara. And in the evening, they study Gemara. Bekiut, but Gemara. And the problem is that if you just learn Gemara without the broader Torah, it's dry. And it can turn people off from Judaism. If all Judaism is how to brush your teeth on Shabbat, or how to eat your watermelon on Shabbat, then that is not a modern, idealistic way of life in the eyes of the young people. Remember, the young people are going to universities, they're being exposed to socialism and humanism and globalism and universalism and feminism and all of these new appealing ideologies, and they really turn them on. And what Rav Kook is saying is that the aspect of the Torah which can and should turn the young people on are being neglected. What is the broad Torah? If you look at your education in the Midrashot, you have a much broader syllabus than your brothers do. Nechama Leibovich used to say that the reason why she could become such a gadol hador in Tanakh was A, because she didn't have children, and B, because her brothers had to learn Gemara all the time, and she was free to learn Tanakh. If you look at your schedule in Midrashah, you have Shiorim in Tanakh a lot more than the boys do. You learn a lot Machshavet Yisrael, philosophy, Jewish thought a lot more than the boys do. Musar, in a lot of yeshivas, they were against learning Musar. Chassidut, Kabbalah. These are topics which were not being studied, and even to this day, in the classical Haredi yeshivot, these topics are not studied. And Rav Kook is pointing out that we are missing out on our best arsenal to bring people back to Judaism. When a Baal Tshuva yeshiva, like Or Sameach, Esh HaTorah, Machon Meir, when they want to attract somebody to Judaism, they don't learn with them a sugya of how much I have to pay if my ox gores your cow, or how to eat your watermelon on Shabbat. That's not what's going to turn on somebody from Judaism. What's going to turn on somebody to Judaism is the depth and the broadness of the beautiful aspects of Torah. And so they teach them Kabbalah, they teach them philosophy, they teach them the beauty of Tanakh, the beauty of Shabbat. Every time I learn Ma'amar Ador, I recall I had a student from South Africa, a young girl who became a Baal HaTshuva at the age of 15. And as is very often the case, her mother was okay with her becoming religious, until she wanted to kasher the kitchen. And the mother said, don't tell me what to do in my kitchen. And there started to be friction. And the mother spoke to her father, the girl's grandfather, about how the daughter is driving her crazy. She wants her to kasher the kitchen. And the grandfather called his granddaughter over for a cup of tea. And he said to her, I understand you want to become religious. And the girl thought he'd be happy, so she said, yeah. And the grandfather said, listen, I know a lot more about Judaism and religion than you do, because I'll tell you something that even your mother doesn't know. I grew up in a cheder. I grew up in a Haredi family. And the girl said, yeah? You were religious? The grandfather started quoting to her Gemarot by heart. And she didn't know what he was talking about. He says, you see, I'm quoting you from the Talmud, from what I remember from my childhood. I learned a lot of Talmud. I learned a lot of halacha. So the girl said to her grandfather, what happened? The grandfather said, I'll tell you. When I was 14, I asked my Rebbe a question. I said, why aren't we allowed to drive on Shabbos? I see non-Jews drive on Shabbat, nothing happens. I see non-religious Jews drive on Shabbat. I don't see lightning coming out of the sky to strike them down. So why don't we drive on Shabbat? And the Rebbe, who had never learned philosophy, slapped him in the face and said, you're not allowed to ask apikorsa questions. The 14-year-old boy, this grandfather, when he was 14, a couple months later, he forgot the slap. He's a curious kid. And he asked the grandfather, he asked the Rebbe another question. He said, how do I know that there is a God? Can you prove to me that there is a God? I don't see him. And this time, together with the slap in the face, the Rebbe threw him out of the cheder and said, there's no place in yeshivas for people who ask apikorsa questions. And the grandfather turned to his granddaughter and said, if a religion cannot answer the questions of a 14-year-old boy, I didn't want any part of that religion. So why are you interested in this superficial, old-fashioned, voodoo, superstitious religion? And the granddaughter said to her grandfather, I don't understand. The reason why I'm interested in Judaism is because it's very beautiful. When I asked my madricha why she doesn't travel in a car on Shabbat, she gave me a very beautiful answer. How Shabbat is a day of rest, and a day for the family, and a day of contemplation, a day of learning, etc., etc. And she said, when I asked my madricha why she doesn't wear pants, my madricha gave me a beautiful answer about boys and girls and relationships and tzniut and the family. And then the girl noticed that her grandfather's eyes were getting moist. And she naively asked, Grandpa, why are you crying? And the grandfather answered his granddaughter. He said, you today are getting the answers to the questions that I asked 50 years ago. But 50 years ago, the rabbis were not equipped to answer the questions because they didn't study philosophy. They didn't learn Kuzari. They didn't learn Morei Nevuchim. Now, if you ask the question, why did the yeshiva world stop and neglect the broad Torah, if it's so intellectually beautiful and emotional and exciting, and if this is what's going to bring people back, so why didn't we learn it for 1900 years? So if you turn over the page, we'll see three, four different reasons that are given why. If you look in Source Vav, Rabbeinu Bechaye writes in Chovot al Vavot, which was written about 1,000 years ago. Even 1,000 years ago, it was already a problem that yeshivas were just learning Gemara. And he says, this is in his introduction, Umi mibnei dorenu shelibo mitorer li'iyun bechokhmat haTorah, hu poneh ledvarim shu yikare al yadam chacham etzel amei haaretz. When people decide to dedicate time to learn, they study things that will bring them status from the masses. That rabbis will give him respect. To this day in the yeshiva world, status is if you're sharp in Gemara. Who learns Musar during Seder time? It's just those who have difficulty with Gemara. Who learns Tanakh during Seder time? Those who aren't sharp enough to learn Gemara. In the yeshiva world, who gets to marry the Rosh Yeshiva's daughter? It's the sharpest guy in Gemara. And when guys have a question in the Beit Midrash and the rabbis aren't around, they turn to the guy, sharpest guy in Gemara. And when they're looking for a new Rebbe, that's who they turn to. And in short, that's what brings status. So other things like philosophy, it was neglected. The Ramchal was writing about 400 years ago. He writes that it was still a problem. That people are just learning Gemara and Halacha, and they neglect learning Musar and philosophy and Kabbalah and the depths of Judaism. And he writes, this is source Hay on your source sheet, from Mesilat Yesharim, from the introduction. Ach me'atim yu min amin hazeh asher yikvu'u iyun v'limud al nyanei shlemut avoda. Very few people dedicate time to understanding why and how to serve Hashem with a full heart. Alava, how to love God. Yirah, how to be in awe of God. Dveikut, I'll call shar chelkei chasidut, how to be a good person. Lo mitnei she'en advarim eile ikarim etzlam. In the yeshiva world, it's not that they say that it's not important to love Hashem and to be a good person. If you ask them point blank, is it good to love God? Is it good to be a good person? Is it good to be ethical? Is it good to know God? They will say, of course. They neglect and they scorn, they don't spend time on learning the broad Torah. Why? They say, Lo yisha'er limud hadvarim ha'ele, kriyat ha'svarim izeh ha'min, ki im etzel otam she'en sichlam kol kach tak, ve'karov liot gas. They say, Tanakh, that's for simple people, that's for children, that's for women, the same thing with Midrash, the same thing with the pleasant topics, that was scorned. Rav Moshe Sternbuch gives a third reason. He still lives today in Yerushalayim. He's the head of the Eda Charedit. And he was asked in his Shelot Tshuvot, Tshuvot Vahanagot, Volume 2, Siman Tafnun Zayin, 457. He was asked this exact question. Why in the Charedim, in the Cheder, do they not teach Tanakh to the children? And he answers, Lo naguken, the minhag is not to teach Tanakh to children. Why? Don't Chazal say in Pirkei Avot, Bein Chamesh Lemikra, Bein Eser Lemishnah, Bein Chamesh Esrei Letalmud. At the age of 5, you should be learning Tanakh. Cover all of Tanakh, and then at the age of 10, start Mishnah. And then at the age of 15, after you finish Mishnah, that's when you start learning Gemara. Why today in the Haredi educational system do they start learning Gemara in 4th grade rather than in 10th grade? Why don't they spend more time learning Tanakh? And Rav Sternbuch answers, the reason is, Dilimura Tanakh kipshuto alul ligashem chas v'shalom hanagota kadosh baruch hu imanu. V'kashe yoter lomod Tanakh milomod sugya amuka b'shas. Young people will be confused by the questions that the Tanakh raises. The Tanakh raises questions of philosophy. The Tanakh raises questions about Reuven and Bilha and Yudah sleeping with Tamar and David and Bathsheba. And there are a lot of questions in Tanakh. And so Rav Sternbuch says, rather than raise questions, so we simply don't learn Tanakh. The same thing with philosophy. I remember when I was in Kiryat Arba in the Yeshivat Hezder, and I was in charge of the Shvushim, the Shavua Yeshiva, the Israelis who would come for a week to try out the Yeshiva. They're in 12th grade. And in addition to arranging Shiurim and Sichot and dormitories and everything for them, I also spoke with them about to see if our Yeshiva was good for them. And there was one guy who I asked him, what other yeshivas did you check out? He mentioned the name of a black hat yeshiva in Bnei Brak. So I said to him, well, you probably realize that in a Hezder Zionist, religious Zionist yeshiva, the hashkafa is considerably different. What you're debating what hashkafa to go to? And the boy answered me. He said, well, I was debating, but I think I made up my mind. I said, what do you mean? He told me that he spent a week in a black hat yeshiva in Bnei Brak, and at 10:30 at night, he was very happy with himself that he was learning Kuzari, and the mashgiach, the rabbi, was in the Beit Midrash, walks around, he asked him, like he asked all the boys, what are you learning? And he says very proudly, he holds up a Kuzari, and the rabbi says, well, you know, in our yeshiva, we don't learn Kuzari. So the boy said, why not? And the mashgiach says, because the Kuzari raises questions. Like the whole book is question, answer, about Judaism. And the 12th grader says to him, but what's the problem of learning questions? Hare, the Kuzari gives me the answer. And the rabbi says, and what if you don't like the answer? You'll get confused. So the boy said, well, I can ask my Rebbe and see if there's another answer. Anyway, the mashgiach said to the boy, he said, I don't think that this yeshiva is for you. And the boy answered him, I know this yeshiva is not for me. Because in certain circles, they don't like asking questions. Again, like we said before, like this girl from South Africa, her grandfather asked questions, and the answer that he got was a slap in the face. Now, Rav Kook is pointing out, there's a fourth reason that we should point out. Why did yeshivas stop learning the breadth, the broad Torah, the beautiful, deep, and emotional Torah of philosophy and Kabbalah and Chassidut? Rav Kook goes on to explain in Ma'amar Ador that when there is no competition, when you have a monopoly, that's when things stagnate. Why is it illegal for Bill Gates and Windows to have a monopoly on the computers? Because who loses out? The consumer. If one company has a monopoly, they can charge exorbitant amounts. They can have a very bad product. And the consumers have no choice, but they'll have to buy it. I remember when I came to Israel 40 years ago, there was only one soap company, Neka Sheva. And it was like a detergent, like laundry soap. It was hard as a rock, no lather, no deodorant. And I asked my Israeli roommate, I said, did I buy laundry soap by accident? And he says, you can use it for laundry, you can use it to wash the floor, put it in water, you can shower with it, this is the soap that we all use. Because when Israel was a small country, one company had a monopoly on soap, and they didn't have to improve. On the other hand, in modern society, there's competition, which is good. And who gains from competition? Everybody. What happened was for 2,000 years, religion had a monopoly on the Jews. The Jews all observed Shabbat, they all ate kosher, they all married Jews, they all studied the Torah, and there was no competition because Jews did not leave the ghetto, they didn't go to universities, they didn't know what was going on. And the truth is, until the Renaissance, there really wasn't that much ideology in the world. People were crude, and Jews were always a cut above everybody else. But all of a sudden, with the emancipation, when the Jews started leaving the ghetto and started seeing that there were a lot of beautiful ideologies in the world, there is humanism, and democracy, and socialism, and globalism, and equality, and they started looking down on Judaism, which was just, how much do I have to pay if my ox gores your cow? What Rav Kook is saying is that the rebellion that we learned about last time in the Mishnah Masechet Sotah, that tells us that there's going to be a rebellion against religion, Davka as part of the redemption process, part of the Gula process. Why does there have to be this rebellion? It's part of the plan. It was written 1,800 years ago in the Mishnah. Why did it have to be? Rav Kook is answering, in order to force the rabbis to rediscover the beautiful aspects of religion. Because today there's competition. Today, most Jews aren't religious anymore. If we want to bring them back, we have no choice but to compete. How can we compete with universalism and humanism and globalism and all of the beautiful ideologies that are floating around the universities of the world? The only way is by showing them that Judaism is at least as idealistic. We believe in modernism. We believe in secular education. We believe in Zionism. We want to return to the original Torah, which is the broad Torah. And this, in fact, is the common denominator between the two points that are also the problem and also the solution of bringing people back to Torah in our generation. What does it mean to return to the original Torah? Two points. Number one, the previous point was to return to religious Zionism, which is the original Torah. What we're saying now is the second point, to return to the original Torah, which is the broad Torah, the beautiful Torah, the emotional Torah. It's deep, it's beautiful. It talks about equality, it talks about universalism. It talks about the beauty of womanhood, it talks about the beauty of manhood, it talks about all of the dynamic ideas are part of the Torah. And what Rav Kook is telling the young people is that not only do you not have to rebel against Torah to be idealistic, but you will find the real, most idealistic ideals, davka, in the Torah. Like the famous story about Rav Isaac of Krakow, who dreamt that if he would go to Warsaw, he would find a big treasure underneath a palm tree, which was right by the foot of a bridge, which is over the local river. And the guy wakes up in the morning, tells his wife, "I had this dream. I'm going to go to Warsaw and look for that treasure." His wife said, "You're crazy," but he said it was such a realistic dream. He takes all of his savings, travels to Warsaw, looks for the river, finds the bridge. At the foot of the bridge is a palm tree. At the foot of the palm tree is a guard. And he has no choice. He approaches the guard and says to the guard, "You know what? I had this dream. My name is Isaac from Krakow, and I came from Krakow because I had this dream that where you're standing, buried deep beneath the ground, is a treasure. And if you turn the other way and you let me dig, I'll give you half of the treasure." And the guard started laughing. He said, "You foolish Jew, I thought Jews are supposed to be smart. You came all the way to Krakow, from Krakow to Warsaw, just because you had this dream?" And Isaac said, "What do you mean? But I saw this river, and this bridge, and this palm tree, and it's exactly like I saw in the dream." And the Polish guard said to him, "Are you crazy? You know what? Last night I had a dream. I had a dream that there's this house in Krakow where some guy named Isaac has underneath the stove is buried a treasure. And if he digs there, he'll find the treasure. Do you think I am going to go to Krakow and look for an Isaac and uncover a stove? It's just a dream." And Isaac realized he was talking about his own house. And he goes home as soon as possible, and he digs underneath the oven, the stove, where the goy had dreamt, and there he found the treasure. In other words, you don't have to go far to find the treasure. The treasure of Judaism is right under our nose, the Torah. The Torah is godly, so accordingly it is eternal. It is the most idealistic, the deepest, the most emotional, the most intellectual book that there is, but only if we rediscover the original Torah, the broad Torah, and the Torah of original religious Zionism. Rav Kook is explaining, why did there have to be this rebellion against religion, davka, as part of the Gula process? This is what's called a Yirida Letzorech Aliyah. Like the arrow that I'm drawing now, which you people all know what it looks like. The arrow of ups and downs that all of life and all of mankind is trial and error and learning from our mistakes and continuing to grow and to learn. But on the way, there are also ups and downs. Because in this world, if you want to jump, you have to first crouch. Only if you crouch can you jump high. The further down you press a spring, the higher it's going to jump. And that is why there had to be this rebellion against religion in order to force Judaism, to force the rabbis, to rediscover the original broad and beautiful Judaism in order to compete. And that is part of the beauty of what we have in the Midrashah, that we learn the broad Torah, that's where Rav Kook and the Chovot al-Vavot and the Ramchal were saying, to learn the broad Torah, the beautiful Torah. This is what is appealing. This is what brings Balei Tshuva and those who are further back to Judaism. And also for somebody who is religious, somebody who's firm from birth. If you want to love Torah, the way is to learn the broad Torah and the original Torah of religious Zionism. It shows that modernism, Zionism, the dynamics of the modern world, not only do they not contradict religion, but it's the same God. The God of history is the same God who gave us the Torah. He is the same God who gives us all of technology and modernism. And this is the answer. And this is what would have brought the girl from South Africa's grandfather back to Judaism. This is what is going to strengthen our connection with Judaism, because what Rav Kook is saying is that as we approach Geula, Hashem wants us to be on a higher level, not just to be religious because that's what Jews do, not just because of peer pressure, because today there's no peer pressure to be religious. Most Jews are not religious. But anybody who is religious today is on a higher level of religion because he does mitzvot out of identification, out of understanding, out of seeing the beauty of the Torah. Not the Torah cannot be shallow anymore. The Torah has to be beautiful, and it is. We just have to rediscover the depths of the broad and original Torah of religious Zionism. Bahatzlacha.